Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
Frankie Darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Phil and Getty, Kerouac and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Friday's a split between Echoes in the Dark and Break On Through with Pam, and Sit In with Aphasiana and Babbler on Saturday as they teach you the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint. These shows are designed that you can color outside the lines with rich raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Ray and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Evening, Pam.
Good evening, Rex. How's it going?
I'm doing fine. What's up?
Well, life is good. I got out of the apartment today. Nice weather. Looking forward to hanging out with you. You never know, maybe another cool poet or two. Great lineup of poetry with the carryovers that we're doing from both shows. I just have to say other than the slight headache, I am actually quite happy with life. And, I'm trying to think if there's anything particularly exciting going on. Not really. Yeah. Just same old, same old. The rabbits and squirrels are all outside fighting over food and women, and my teenager, as soon as she passes her test, will be getting her driver's permit. Then she'll be practicing more, and then she'll get her driver's license eventually. And who knows, maybe this old mom won't have to walk so much.
Well, just send the squirrels out to Hollywood, as John Cena last night was neutered on stage by performing in the nude, one of those ritual humiliation angles.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Wow. Crazy stuff.
Yep. Why not? Take a big man
right
like that and de-nut the bastard. Hey, you're doing this. You ain't got no choice.
Oh, my goodness. And Quicken says in the room, old driver's permit, scary, shudders. Yep. I don't know. There are definitely some people out there I wouldn't mind seeing neutered, but I guess that's not for me to decide.
Absolutely, a D-nutter. It was a very unfunny moment because Kimmy Jimmel, the newest Karen on stage, was utterly tasteless and not funny at all. Somebody ought to fire that thing.
I did not even watch the Oscars. You know, I thought about it.
Neither does anybody else. Hey, it's just a bunch of freeloading farts prancing around, getting their little bag of goodies that's worth $50,000 just to sit in and prove they're better than everybody else. So fuck them.
Yep. I'd much rather listen to and talk about poetry. So.
Yeah, that Nimrod tried getting into Robert Downey Jr., throwing in a little drug-related put. Hey, is that cocaine nose just bought in there? And hey, what's that rectangle pad? Is that your acceptance speech, or is that just your penis? Real funny, Jimmy. Kimmy?
Put
your red shoes on and go back to hell.
Well, it definitely sounds like, as usual, I didn't miss a whole lot by not tuning into those award shows.
Well, nobody's missing anything because nobody's watching it anymore. it's irrelevant.
Yep, exactly. There's just too much else going on in this world. Yep, exactly. Well, like I said, we've got a great lineup tonight. We've got carryovers from two shows, first Nirvana, and then your contest that you ran with the combination of Bukowski and Led Zeppelin.
Absolutely.
So,
we've got a few rights on board.
Well, I guess whenever you're ready, we can dive on in.
Well, as Robert Plant said, let's bring it on home.
All right. All right. Well, our first poem up is Parasite by Dan Ellison. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
Parasite by Dan Ellison. I ate my parasites, the Ouroboros snake, the serpent that swallows the whole of his tail, engorged on my mistake. I am striker and the stricken, both victimizer and victim, a violent stain that won't scrub free, a symptomatic social affliction. I croak upon the stair, shadows throw shoes on the curtains. I am forever near, that which I fear is for certain. End poem. All right. What do you got?
I like this. I like this. I thought, you know, the prompt he wrote to, of course, was I am my own parasite. And I like that he went with the Ouroboros snake, you know, a symbol that obviously has been used before for various metaphors. But I like it how he uses the idea that we when we choke down our own poison, when we choke on the poisonous thoughts or words that we have, at least that's how I read it. I also like the use of the juxtaposition in here. I am the striker and the stricken, both victimizer and victim, a violent stain that won't scrub free, a symptomatic social affliction. I don't know, like, I kind of get the impression of, it puts me almost on, like, drugs and addiction and, you know, swallowing that kind of poison. But it could also be, as well as I was mentioning before, almost an emotional poison. In like thoughts and words. So really just an amazing write and very well done.
Nice, I like that. Well, the Ouroboros does hit on that note of destruction and recreation, but in this one there is no recreation. It's the full embodiment of the parasite itself. The idea of eating one's own tail kind of hits on the idea of because he does. I am a striker and a stricken, both the victimizer and the victim. He is his worst own enemy. But I do like that note. A violent stain that won't scrub free, a symptomatic social affliction. There is a note to being the worst of what humanity offers with those lines. I croak upon the stairs, shadows throw shoes on the curtains. Note of fear in that one, the shoes and the curtains, that which is always hidden, but it shows itself as something lurks there beneath the curtains. I am forever near, that which I fear is for certain. The idea, he's afraid of himself, understands his nature and the fact that he can't get out of the hole he's already dug for himself. And in eating the parasite, he becomes the parasite. That which, that note to being a social affliction, kind of hits on the idea of a spreading construct, like a venereal disease. If you don't take care of it, it just eats you. Kind of a note to syphilis as it eats into the brain eventually, as well as soft palate notes within the mouth, and scars and scores the bones quite well. So that parasite in this nature kind of hits on that idea of being syphilitic in its creation. I like that.
That is really cool. Very cool. I like that observation there, Rex, on the whole idea of the symptomatic social affliction being related to the idea of sexually transmitted diseases. Great observation there.
All right.
And up next we have Scratch the Itch by L.G. Mace. I am my own parasite. I suck my concentrated blood, heavy colored, so much redder than red. Half living, unrecyclable sanity, give me cutting madness instead. Can't scratch the itch from my own bite, must mix in new blood for better insight. Until the scarab breaks upon, open to release the feasting maggots within, cannibalistic tendencies, revolving pleasurable first refrain and sin. The maggots break the surface sated on my rotted flesh. I shall find a new place on my befouled body, another site where the meat is fresh. Scabs cover my body like a rotting, falling apart leper snitch. I am my own parasite, jaws wide open, clamping down a gobbet of flesh, absolving the need to scratch the itch. And pone. Wow, ew, heebie-jeebies, maggots on rotting flesh, yuck. Okay, just had to say that.
Yes, that note to saprophagous prepubescent pupa. Those are the maggots. Fat and rosy. I like it. Although this is it's a bit more visceral than Dan's piece. This actually goes into that note of how parasitic she is on that note. I am my own parasite. I suck my concentrated blood, heavy colored, so much redder than red. Half living, unrecyclable sanity, give me cutting madness instead. Now, there's a double note to reality. Give me cutting madness instead of the type of sanity that she's living with. And can't scratch the itch from my own bite. Must mix in new blood for better insight. Ooh. I do like the idea of dropping in the scarabs as well as the maggots eating on rotting flesh, because back in the day they used maggots to eat dead flesh so that new flesh could actually come after the rotted was eaten away rather than cutting it away. It's a nice note to making that deep cut to get rid of it. You just let the maggots eat the dead stuff because that's what they live on anyway. That's what they enjoy, and let them do their job, then take them off and let the open wound heal, for the most part, way back when. The scabs cover my body like a rotting, falling apart leper snitch. Now, that's a note, too, the snitch angle, a leper. Just lost the nose. So that note in back end, jaws wide open, clamping down, a gobbet of flesh, absolving the need to scratch the itch. Boy, that walks right into that that leper angle to finish out. So disgustingly good there, LG.
Oh, I have to agree. I like that. Disgustingly good. And while the maggots definitely give me the heebie-jeebies, I actually appreciated it. In fact, I've written Dark Rites myself involving maggots, because they're just such a symbolism of death. But as you were mentioning, you know, not only were they used medicinally, like so blanking out.
They're more effective than using leeches.
Well, leeches were effective too, but the problem was, that's what I was going to say, leeches. Leeches were actually effective. The problem is people started overusing them and using them in the wrong circumstances. But you know, so that's where that kind of fell apart. But I did like the mention of the scarab, because, you know, you think of the scarab and how it was like, you know, a part of the ancient Egypt culture of religious practices, and, you know, connected with the rising of the sun. I thought, well, that was really cool that for her to bring that in. But what I liked about this one is it has its similarities to Dan's, but it also has differences. Like, Dan's seem to be about destruction that happens all at once, whereas this one seems to speak on destruction that happens a little bit at a time, especially with the line, "I shall find a new place on my befouled body, another site where the meat is fresh." That actually kind of makes me think of people who are into self-harm and cutting, which is extremely sad, and how after a while you can't feel anything because you're too covered with scars on one spot, so you move on to the next. And it's kind of like that line, that representation of that numbness that you begin to feel, and you need to move on to where there's that actual pain that will remind you that you're in control of your own pain, your own destruction. I am curious, what is a gobbet? Do you happen to know? I'm gonna check that up.
A gobbet would be that that little chunk, that little bite you take.
Oh, okay. I had never heard of that word. I had never. Oh, okay. A gobbet, I think, is a piece or chunk, especially of raw meat. Interesting. Learned
just
a new
like
word.
That,
well, that is
just like that new leader in Haiti, the cannibal who called barbecue.
Oh, yes, yes. Cannibalistic tendencies. Cannibalism is interesting because it's such a part of so many different cultures throughout history, and, you know, it is actually, if you do it legally, cannibalism itself isn't against the law in some states. It's just the fact that you kill somebody, you know, in order to eat them, I think. Either way, I wouldn't recommend it. I'm not saying, you know, if anybody's listening, I'm not saying I recommend cannibalism. I'm just, you know, throwing something out there that I read or learned.
Long pork. The other white meat.
The other white meat. We're all going to Rex's house for dinner after the show.
You're right, Quick. And the American Indians used to take the heart out of their victims way back in the day, and they bite into it while it was still had a touch of beating. They thought it gave them the power to hold sway over their enemies.
Yep. Yep.
Mayans used to do it as well. But the note that guy barbecue, he was actually seen taking a bite out of a human leg for his shared audacity to prove that, hey, fuck with me and I will eat you. Nothing, it's strictly used at that purpose for pure fear.
Yep. Yeah, that is very, very true. Throughout history, and, you know, there's that idea of the connection between the power of the human body transferred. Very cool. I like when a poem makes for a good conversation.
It's funny because a writer back in the 1800s wrote a story about a crew that had to abandon ship. There was like four men in the boat. And what little supplies they had to that they went through, and then they drew straws to see who they have to kill so that the rest of the crew could stay alive. And the young one, I think it was 19, maybe 20 years old, threw the short straw, and the captain, I think, at that time who was on the boat with him, offered him, "No, you're the youngest, you deserve to live. I've had a good life, so I will offer myself up, take my life." And the kid said no. And he had a certain name, I can't remember at the moment, but he said, "No, I drew the straw, I'll be the sacrifice." So he was the sacrifice. And they ate him, obviously. There were bones left in the boat. They did survive. And the funny thing is, about 30 years later, it actually happened. And the kid that was sacrificed that day, well, who gave up his life and was eaten, was actually the very same name that appeared in that author's book 30 years previous.
Oh, wow. And was that made into a book or a movie, or is it just something you read about? Like, where could I read more about this?
It was a book. I'd have to look it up.
Oh, okay.
It was a book that actually came true. Four men in a raft, youngest being 19, 20, same name as the one in the book. Kind of a weird twist of fate.
Hmm. Very cool.
Yeah.
I'll have to read more about that. It sounds interesting.
Yeah, that's what I meant, Quicken. Warriors consuming the heart. It supposedly gave them the power to overcome their persecutors, their enemies. I don't know. All right, what do we got next?
Up next, we have Parasitic Bind by Jody Melton. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
Parasitic Bind by Jody Melton. In the shadow depths of a symbiotic relationship, by my own design lies a parasite veiled in the guise of benign, feeding on the essence of my will, a silent usurper, insidious and still. Born from the cradle of desires unmet, it thrives in the corners where regret and longing beget. Darkness now becoming clearer, chalked my breakfast on a mirror. An addiction, a craving, a relentless thirst for that which at first seemed to quench, but now only cursed. I am the host of this enemy, self-made in the labyrinth of my choices. Its foundation has been laid. In whispers, it whispers in echoes of my bad choices, promising solace while it feasts and rejoices. All the while I'm lamenting my next decision, leaving me sequestered in my own prison. In the clutches of this specter, I see the mirrored reflection of what I used to be, a soul vibrant, now shattered by the parasite's creed. Its hunger insatiable, on my will it feeds. Yet within the depths of this despair, a flicker of resolve begins to flare, aware now that I am both the jailer and the key to unshackle the chains, to finally be free. The battle is within, the terrain all too familiar, against the formidable adversary, both foe and a neighbor. With each falter, a lesson, with each fall, a rise, to reclaim the self from the addiction's guise. This parasite, this shadow, a part of me, it may be, but no longer the master, for I choose to be free. In the heart of the struggle, the truth I realize. I am my own savior. In this, my power lies. And boom. And again, Parasite.
Absolutely. And great read there, Rex. What an amazing write by Jody. You know, it's so great to be able to see when different poets take the same prompt, and you can see the similarities, but you can also see how they take it in different directions. As always, Jody has an amazing rhyming poem with strong imagery, a great moral lesson at the end. I like that this one speaks on the idea that we are not just our own parasites. We are also our own saviors. We we need to realize, to stand up, whatever it is that we're battling against. And here it seems as if, you know, obviously there's an addiction, you know, with an addiction, a craving, a relentless thirst for that which at first seemed to quench but now only curse. I'm the host in this entity, self-made in the labyrinth of my choices. Its foundation has been laid. Those are really powerful lines that to me describe what it's like to be addicted to drinking, what it's like to be an alcoholic, and to think at first it's just a casual way to quench the thirst, and then realize that it's taken over body and mind. But I really have to say I like the way that Jody does take a more positive spin on this with the last two stanzas and the realizing that the power lies within yourself. The strength lies in it within yourself. And so I really like this all the way through, but again, the end stanza is just amazing. This parasite, this shadow, a part of me, it may be but no longer the master, for I choose to be free. In the heart of the struggle, the truth I realize, I am my own savior. In this, my power lies. A wonderful line and very well done.
Nice. All right. Yes, this is about addiction, but he doesn't hit on what the addiction is, except for that note to the on the mirror, chops my breakfast on a mirror. So I got to go with the idea of cocaine for this one, but you can walk it along other things to heroin, alcohol, sex, any addiction or craving that you feed. It whispers insidiously inside, and it takes root because, hey, you don't think about it. And even if you, when you take a look at yourself truly in the mirror, you get to see that which you are. And you can either walk that note of reflected thought to undo what you've done, or you can give in to the idea of, hey, just a little bit more, and it eats away at the rest of one's soul. But the last stanza does open up that factor. You've got to be willing to walk that mile to get unshackled, so to speak. Otherwise, nobody can do it for you. You got to be willing to do it for yourself.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, that is so true. You know, I mean, you can try to reach out and help somebody, but for the most part, if they're not ready to help themselves first, it's not going to do a darn bit of good.
Yep.
And up next, oh, I'm sorry, what was that, Rex?
What we got next?
Ah, that is a good question. Well, up next we have Dirty Wings by Babbler. I was born with white feathers. They tripped me up as a child, dragging through the mud. Mother sold off the ones for flight, acclimating these feet to solid ground. Black paint smothered in my teens, pulled at in my early 20s, pinched by ex-boyfriends, lovers, so-called friends, cross-legged on my bed, scissors in hand. I slash at the scraggly remains, aching to be human, quietly waiting for new growth. End poem.
Great read, man. All right. The Dirty Wings here, I'm getting, but by the time we get down to the back end of this, I'm getting that note to hair, white feathers, kind of hits on the note of blonde. They tripped me up as a child, dragging through the mud, kind of the idea of tomboyish behavior. Black paint smothered in my teens, that goes through a little bit of gothic, hitting a, you don't just do the eyes and the nails, so to speak. You do the hair as well. The pinched, so-called friends, cross-legged on my bed, scissors in my hand. I slash at the scraggly remains, aching to be human. The idea of being outside the box of what one perceives as normality and seeing themselves in a different light in that moment, and cutting off what irks them the most in the moment, their hair, and looking for a new look, I guess, or a new outlook. What about you?
Well, first of all, I have to say it's really great to see Babbler and see her writing, and I'm really glad that she was inspired. I like your observation about the idea of the feathers representing hair, because we really do go through like a lot of different, like hair is a way, especially for young ladies, to express themselves, you know. And I could see like the black paint being that idea of going through some gothic phase. I like, though, that it can also work on the idea of the white, I was born with white feathers, is that metaphor to me of being born with that innocence and that sense of hope that a child has. But when you live within a circumstance where there isn't a whole lot of hope around, where there isn't a whole lot of joy around, you soon find that there isn't any use, any value to that. And, you know, the self-destruction, and I like how this speaks on the destruction of the wings, the destruction of somebody's confidence by others. And then the last part with the I slash at the scraggly remains aching to be human, I thought that was such powerful imagery, and representing the idea of pruning away that which is dead, that which is broken, in order to experience that new growth, knowing that that is no longer the person you are going to be. And it has a very, like, phoenix rising out of the ashes type vibe to it. And I like how that speaks on that new growth, that rebirth that happens when we cut away, and not literally cut away, but figuratively cut away that which is no longer supposed to be a part of ourselves. So amazing write and very well done. All right. I gotta go grab the next one. And we have Come to My Rescue by Liquid Mind Forever. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
Come to My Rescue by Liquid Mind Forever. She took 2. At my feeding time, she pushed through food through the door, and I wanted more than I could steal. Wolverines and the whites of winter seek any sign of weakness. A drop of blood, a leftover spot of urine from an abandoned motherless deer. It's near feeding time at the zoo, and who am I but a voyeur, a seer, with fear dripping like a faggot, burning red hot glue to the beer of desperation here, hoping, coping, scoping while I wait to hear an endearing word. Munchausen syndrome, Mercure chromed, a tomb into which I've been diabolically imprisoned, his vision, collision. But nothing's ever heard, only what's occurred and inferred as he impresses his bipolar, maniacal dystopian judgment like indelible paw prints on newly fallen snow. And can I possibly know, as I stand below, looking on, looking up, looking in disbelief, looking for a chance to steal a galvanized glance, perchance, a show aggrandized dance, a stance of temporary insanity, the profanity of merely looking on into the cage, another page filled with rage and mange. Warp and woof, without proof, but this spoof may imprison me beyond reconciliation's hoof. No retraction of this invocation of decency and crumbs left behind, for held no appeal, for he steals with his zeal each drop of concealed lies, and I must try to pry open the spoken words of damnation, vile child, riled, defiled. I eat not of the leftovers, and I want so much more than I can hope to reveal, for he steals milk from a dried old cow teat, once replete, now depleted of fairness. Oh, awareness, how bare, despair, beware, there's nothing to compare. I'm slandered, hammered, in the dead of winter, with a dead of darkness to fend off the starkness of being raped and left for dead. Let the games of Olympus win the day. I pray as the prey of revenge tends to avenge a previous crime, and I am the abandoned deer here, served up for eager deceivers to dine upon. O great gods of the oppressed, come to my rescue. End poem.
Great read there, Rex, and oh my goodness, what an absolutely powerful write by Liquid Mind Forever and Intelligent. Amazing imagery and metaphors throughout. She keeps a really consistent tone. And I like the imagery and the wordplay. When she says a seer with the R attached to the C, I really like that because it's the idea of seeing something, but it's also the idea of being a seer, a fortune teller, somebody who sees the future, who understands the future. I thought that was really quite clever wordplay. And the opening lines to Wolverines in the White of Winter seek any sign of weakness, a drop of blood, a leftover spot of urine from an abandoned motherless deer. I like how she uses nature as a metaphor for the idea that oftentimes people will look for the weak to attack, to tear them apart both physically and emotionally. I also like where she says, look on into the cage, another page filled with rage and mange, warp and woof without proof, but this spoof may imprison me beyond reconciliation's hoof, no retraction of this infraction of decency and crumbs left behind. Fourth stage carcinoma, hold no appeal, for he steals with his zeal each drop of concealed lies. And I feel like this speaks on the idea of how our experiences transform us. When we start to become as dark and as horrific as our oppressors, we realize that within that moment, that is when we need to be rescued. I really always like the combination of using prey, P-R-A-Y, and prey together, P-R-E-Y. The idea that the juxtaposition of those two going hand in hand, and how oftentimes we find ourselves reaching out for the unknown in hope of not remaining a victim. So amazing lines and very well done.
Nice. I like the opening into this. Wolverines are vicious little buggers. With
yes, they
nasty, are. Nasty choppers. Wolverines and the White of Winter seek any sign of weakness. A drop of blood. A leftover spot of urine from an abandoned motherless deer. It's near feeding time at the zoo. And who am I but a voyeur, a seer with fear, dripping like a faggot burned red, hot glued to the beer of desperation's ear. That opening, it's walking that alley of consumption, the wolves are taking out the leftover, the straggler, as she puts here, the motherless deer. And also that note to Munchausen syndrome, mercurochrome. Kind of walks another note, Munchausen by proxy, the thought of a mother hurting their children to garner attention, and they do it over and over again, sending the child down a a rocky road of a desperate life, because that's what she paints in here. But nothing's ever heard, only what's occurred, and inferred as the impulses hit bipolar, maniacal, dystopian judgment like indelible paw prints on newly fallen snow. Again, that note to purity, whiteness. And can I possibly know, as I stand below, looking on, looking up, looking in disbelief, looking for a chance to steal a galvanized plant for chance. That note to trying to be outside the that temporary insanity in Munchausen's to alleviate themselves of that need to hope and cope in the scope of what's going on. But she does hit on the back end of the starkness of being raped and left for dead. Let the games of Olympus win the day. I pray as the prey of revenge. That hit the brain to the gods for that note of the quintessential idea of Zeus coming down, so to speak, or the Thor of Hammer taking revenge a bit. The need to beg for something other than what's already handy in the mortal realm of things.
I like that. I like that you brought up the part about that Munchausen syndrome, because I feel like once you mentioned it, I realized that that was a really important part of the poem, because, yeah, it is more often mothers, women, than fathers or men who have Munchausen syndrome and will, you know, bring their children in and fake illnesses or purposely make them sick. That's the I mean, it's scary either way, but the especially scary one is like the there's been cases of people, women who will, and I'm not saying, I mean, I'm sure there are cases of men who do it, but the ones I've all read about and listened about have been women who actually will give their kid just enough poison to make them sick. And yeah, it's really fascinating and scary. And really shows in the poem the idea of a relationship between a mother and child that has been corrupted and you know, chiseled away at the psyche.
Yep.
And up next, we have World War III. By Pen to Paper 41. Children record more than we give them credit for, and before slipping into the Vaseline ripples of a warm dream or running on the glinting edge of nightmares, my son uttered words that made me pause at the door. Mom, are we going to start another world war? Well, son, I don't rightly know. But there's so much hate in this world. Everyone is just arming corpses and bandaging ghosts. But here's what I do know. Men sit in the pastel moments before sunrise, broken by sirens, only to realize that being God-fearing men isn't the flex they meant. I know that your home will never belong to a thief, even if you give them the keys. I know that powerful men live in evil houses that have evil basements that demons sleep in. I know that people think art is harder to make than war because that's how you get a defense budget the size of a country's gross domestic product and illiterate citizens. I know atonement is a joke when your worldview is nose to nuke. When the flies eat better than you see. Then you see beyond and through the holes. I know there's money for missiles, but nothing for food. I know the absence of hope is war. I know that if we let them control death, suffering is all we have left. And when we lose the ability to love, we've truly lost who we are. But I guess to answer your question, I don't think the first one ended. It's black now, but either dawn comes or doesn't. Best we can do is live like it's coming. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Well, that was a bit different. From a child's question to an answer that maybe the child won't fully understand unless they're a bit aged, but the idea, we're already in World War III. It's just a different kind of war. It's that note to taking it to the airwaves, so to speak, and then interspersing it with little tidbits of fear drawn across the pages of those who are trained, taught, and paid to offer up nothing but disinformation and fear. Some real ideas. It's all about control, and the only way to have that is to keep the masses in constant fear. With that constant fear, you end up with that note to fight or flight. Most will take flight because they do not want a repeat of the first two world wars, which also ran the same gamut. That note of control, that want, that need to expand themselves to a point because they've also paid ultimate price for one thing or another, and they have taken that angle of being depressed to the point where, no, we can't take it no more. Now it's our turn to fight back, so to speak. But the war is breaking out all over the place. Look what's done. Just done in Haiti. You look at the fact that it only took 3 years for that that new glowing note from NATO. This is the first company that's going, the first country that's going totally green. 3 years later, Sri Lanka is nothing but a mess. They can't feed their populace, and their fool emperors have left the country with all the money. Just like the prime minister down in Haiti, he's not even in country. So it's all about the money they can steal out of the country while bankrupting it and sending everybody into that point where point of inflection is that note of food. When you don't have food to feed, things happen and they escalate. Not to mention all the other little tidbits they're throwing around these days. Gotta have the fear. And hell, besides, with the fact that they got COVID out of a bacterial lab, that's going to be the next real world war, that entity of designer bugs to kill off certain populations.
Sad but true. Yep. Great observations there, Rex. Very cool. Yeah. This is definitely a hard-hitting right. And she wrote to prompt 8, which is, is our whole fleece shun and bastard? And I like the concept of this right, the idea of a child asking a question and the body of the poem being the mother's answer. And not that I actually imagine somebody necessarily having a whole conversation like this with a child, like it depends on the age of the child, but I like the concept and the idea that the child represents the innocent part of ourselves, and the mother and represents that wisdom within ourselves that realizes what kind of horrific things are going on in this world. I also like the phrase, into the Vaseline ripples of a warm dream. You know, that's really just very surreal imagery. And the idea of Vaseline ripples is that goop that we get ourselves stuck into, that toxic, goopy mess that we find ourselves stuck in. And I like how she writes about a world that is unfortunately filled with poison, filled with violence, and just really about people who are extremely just all about themselves and their own greed. And I really like the reference to the art and war. I know that people think art is harder to make than war because that's how you get a defense budget the size of a country's gross domestic product and illiterate citizens. I know atonement is a joke when your worldview is nose to nuke. You know, really, really powerful lines there. And an excellent write on the realization that the war is that already going on, just in a different form than what we had previously experienced. So very well done.
That story was by Edgar Allan Poe. He wrote about four crewmen who were lost at sea and turned to eating the cabin boy named Richard Parker. 46 years later, an English yacht sank, and the remaining four survivors in a lifeboat turned to eating the cabin boy. He was also named Richard Parker.
Oh, it was an Edgar Allan Poe story. Okay.
Yep.
Well, that's cool. I'll definitely have to find that and give that a read because, yeah, he's one of my favorites. I haven't read that one, though. Very cool. All right. Let's see what we have next. Oh, yes, here we go. Do-do-do-do-do. We have Kill the Killer by Duncan Ross Bell. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
By Duncan Ross Bell. Feathers on the broadside, fingers to the flame. This everything is elsewhere. All else is everywhere. We are not the answer. We praise ourselves. Disease. Step aside. The blade is falling. Scissors open sights. The filth we're embalming, calming seas of red, drown the dead, the circus leaves town. The boundaries are determined, as is the concept, and we fall where we are. The blood and a taste of caviar, the sweat and a taste of your fear. Flesh is the tear, the wound is my silence, violence of inhibition. Cut out the cause, kill the killer. Just cleansing clan, the descending plan. No crescendo in the end flow. End poem. All right. What do you got? What do you got?
Great read there, Rex. And what an amazing, hard-hitting write by Duncan Ross. Strong imagery and metaphors. I really like Step Aside, The Blade is Falling, Scissors opens Sights, The Filth We're Embalming, Calming Seas of Red, Drown the Dead, Fed the Circus, Leaves Town. I thought that was really great lines on the idea that if you keep entertaining the masses, or if you keep being entertained by the circus, and the circus being a metaphor for all the crap that's going on in the world, if you keep falling for it, if you keep being entertained by it, then it will stick around. But if you turn your back to it, you kill the killer, you know, if you take away their ability to impact your life, and you take away their power, then, you know, they're just going to, you know, it'll give you that opportunity to grow and to learn for yourself. There's some really just wonderful, dark, visceral lines within this, like flesh is a tear, the wound is my silence, violence of inner vision, count out the cause, kill the killer. I also feel like there's almost like this idea, this point of view speaking from perhaps a serial killer, perhaps someone who has the violence inside themselves or the potential for violence. I think this is definitely a layered right that could have multiple meanings. And I like how those end lines do speak on the idea of the self-destruction of our own inner violence. So excellent right and very well done.
Nice. Well, you did hit on that idea of the circus. That rolls right back to the the Roman days with the Colosseum and feeding the masses that note, because they have become inured to the idea of it being outside the norm. So once you you keep feeding the masses on that level, they don't look at the same way as they once did, because it's in their faces every day. That note, the silkworm bombing, calming Caesar Red, drowned the dead, fed the circus leaves town. And that leaving of town is just the idea of that note, where we're on to the next story. That is the next town, so to speak. The blood and the taste of caviar, the sweat and the taste of your fear. Again, that note of pleasure and pain. Flesh is the tear, the wound is my silence. Violence of inhibition. Cut off course, kill the killer. You got to make it that note again of, it's not all right to dip that heavily into that which is given, fed, force-fed, delivered in every manner of being, whether it's on the internet, whether it's on television, it doesn't matter, in the movies. You keep seeing that all of a sudden things don't mean anything as what they used to anymore, because it's looked upon as that daily dose of endorphins to keep everybody happy in the moment.
I like that idea, and of doing, convincing people to do what keeps them happy in the moment. That's really great observations. I think we actually did a show with a quote about the circus. I'm paraphrasing it, but basically it was like a metaphor for entertaining the masses so that they don't see what's going on in front of them.
No, it's because you got them looking at one thing other. That's how narratives in news work. You get them so pointed on this note, before you know it, what we really didn't want, what they didn't really want us to see, goes unseen because they've never reported on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Sad but true. Sad but true. Sorry, I was just grabbing some just-in-case-they're-needed rights from another contest. So I was slightly distracted there. But, yeah. All right. And let me see what we have next. All right. All right, we have Prompt 10 by KM, and it goes like this. She'll come back as fire to burn on the liars and leave a blanket of ash on the ground. No one will hear her coming. They won't hear one sound, for when she moves, it's quiet, but her rain is loud. Burning down all the liars, cheats, and centers around, she will level up an uneven playing ground, casting dispersions on everyone deserving. She won't quit until she finds no one worth punishing. Trying to purge the world of its evil and make it pure again, this hellish lady will walk through here on a mission with fire. And her soul and all damnation's fury to control, handling out punishment according to set, our world right. She won't stop till there's an end in sight. End poem.
Great, great, great. I can see this a couple of ways. I thought of a comet burst that levels out a note. The idea of the earth offering up its own form of justice with volcanoes and earthquakes and other things that play that angle as well. And she does set that separate that no to damn nations. The idea, that kind of hits at the idea of not just the singular nation, all nations, even that thought of maybe what is supposed to be considered United Nations, which is really nothing but a bloody money trough, because we actually support the rest of the world by paying off the dues of all the other countries in Europe. So it's nothing but a money pig. So there's a hell of a lot of note to the hellish lady also. There's another note, because there's something funny going on. Do you remember the tale of Nineveh? Well, anyway, next month, on the 8th of April, we will have our second full note of the sun being covered by the moon. Another full one. And it's going to run 150-mile wide berth going through 13 states from Texas to Maine. And on its route, will darken eight cities in that role, all of them named Nineveh. And if you remember from the Bible, Jonah was ordered by God to go to Nineveh and get the people in Nineveh to repent, or he would lay those cities to waste. And now we're running up on that very same angle, coming across as eight Nineveh cities across this country from Texas to Maine will be darkened with this event and on April 8th.
That is fascinating. Yes, I did actually know about that and read about that. That's my oldest son's birthday, April 8th. I told him that he needs to, on his birthday, I'm going to call him and sing Total Eclipse of the Heart and to him. But that is actually really fascinating. The idea of those eight cities being completely darkened. And that definitely comes across as a potential warning for sure. And I like what you got from this, right? Because it does speak on, you know, injustice done to those who should be being protected. And, you know, I like the, she wrote to prompt 10, which was, she'll come back as fire to burn on the liars, leave a blanket of ash on the ground. And there was definitely some really powerful and emotive lines. And I like how, as you were mentioning, she speaks in a society that is falling apart due to its lack of morals, its lack of values. It's a society that's falling apart because they don't watch over and protect those who need to be watched over and protected, but instead are out of their own greed and their own desires, destroying. I really like where she says, she will level up an uneven playing ground, casting dispersions on everyone deserving. She won't quit until she finds no one worth punishing. And that really does have that vibe to it of, you know, someone or something that has had enough. So, excellent write and very well done. So, the...
And there was one other thing. The last Total Eclipse came in 2017, and it ran from west to east, downwards from like Seattle and Oregon down through the eastern United States and through the middle and down to the east. And it does this one that's coming in April, they cross, and people are thinking that it kind of looks like it'll look like a cross itself, but there is a note that it resembles more of a Tav.
That is interesting, huh?
Which is a good symbol.
Do you if you have any like articles or videos on that, you know, just send me the link when you get a chance. All right. Very cool. All right. Up next, we have Phoenix to Rise by Little Miss Narnia. And go ahead, please, and give that a read for us. Rex.
Phoenix to Rise by Little Miss Narnia. Burn bright, but hold steady. Soar across a pale moon sky. Flight your wings and be ready. Become new, but never die. Cleanse your burdens and sorrows. Rise from the ashes with unclipped wings. Remember to dance as the sparrows, find joy as a jaybird sings. Remember, you are the phoenix, you are the power, you will be born, torn asunder, born new from the ashes. Stand new in your heart's thumping beats, fine-tune your ears to words of pleasure. Gleam as the inferno heats, patience is a key to the treasure. Focus your power with naught to gain, for you will be reborn today. Rise up and conquer through pain, your flame wings washing sin away. Remember, you are the phoenix, you are power, you will be torn asunder, born new from the ashes. They can clip your wings, they can bury you, the marks your stings cut open and beaten too. Your soul will burn bright, you will always rise up, become a bird and take flight. Cleanse, you would like a dirty cup. Remember, you are the phoenix. You are the power. You will be torn asunder, born new from the ashes. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. And what an amazing write by Little Miss Narnia. And she was inspired by prompts 4 and 10. Let me clip dirty wings, and then the same one as the last one. Amazing lines, great lyrical quality with the rhyme and flow, and also with putting the word remember by itself like 3 times or 2 times, is it? No, it's 3 times. Okay, I had to double check there. The reminder that we are our own phoenix. We have our own power within ourselves. We have that strength to overcome. And there's some great lines all the way through, but I especially like where she says, focus your power with naught to gain, for you will be reborn today. Rise up and conquer through pain, your flamed wings washing sin away. Those are amazing lines on rebirth and renewal. And also I like focus your power with naught to gain, and the idea of you have this inner strength, this inner power, not to gain something for yourself that is of this world, but to gain something that is beautiful and spiritual and an inner strength that you are meant to have. So just an amazing write and very well done.
Nice. So yes, this does kind of walk that note of the singularity, but on the other angle, this could be a call to humanity itself. Cleanse your burdens and sorrows, rise from the ashes with unclipped wings. Remember to dance as the sparrows, find joy as the jaybird sings. Stand new in your heart's thumping beats. Fine-tune your ears to words of pleasure. Gleam as the inferno heats. Patience is key to the treasure. The idea of finding rebirth out of the ashes of a corrupt society.
I like that. Rebirth of the corruption of society. You doing okay there, Rex?
Yep.
Okie dokie. That's good. All right. Well, up next, and this is the last rite for Nirvana, then we'll move on to Bukowski Led Zeppelin, is Breakdown by K.F. Heartless, and it goes like this. I'm broken down, but I can still mend. I'm listening to words you rescind. The teardrops in the drain are hardly a downpour. The fickle fall of rain is hardly a clean source. When the head gasket's blown, like take a torch to the engine, I'll stick around a rodent on your back porch and watch the flames of your suffering. Anger is a gas can. Check the DSM while I caulk the wipers to keep fighting for you. Patch the crack in the windshield. Keep fighting for you. The extra mile drove on fumes, fighting for you, riding the clutch for you, jump-starting you. End poem.
Great reading. I like those first five double tips. They hinted the idea of actually breaking down singly through the notes. But the words you rescind, teardrops in the drain, the fickle fall of rain, solidly clean source, and all like that. When the head gasket blown, take a torch to the engine. I'll stick around a rodent on your back porch and watch the flames of your suffering. There is that quiet note of one who stands and kind of glimmers in the moment. And then that note, too, of anger is a gas can. That note of throwing gas on a fire rather than water. And then the back end of this rolls those notes of someone who is actually, instead of standing around watching you suffer, takes that note to actually trying to illuminate one to the point where they stand beside you to give a sense of balance, a sense of rooted degree in spite of the inferno that's caused by the self and whether this other individual is in the middle of the sticking in the middle of things and watching the conflagration emerge.
Very cool. Very cool. I like that. Yeah, the mention of the gas can and the flames makes me think of that. What was that girl band, TLC? Remember them, the three chicks who sang the song Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls, and the one ended up lighting her ex-boyfriend's car on fire back in the late 90s or something like that, I think. That's just a side note, but I really thought this had brilliant imagery and metaphors. I like how it speaks to me on the idea of being so hurt, so angry that you just, you know, like just completely giving up, and the idea of watching somebody self-destruct and just saying, you know what, yeah, I'm just going to stand by, I'm just going to watch, because at this point there's nothing I can do. Of course, that's just how I take the right. I mean, I'm sure it can be taken in different ways. I like the phrase by itself, anger is a gas can, the idea that anger can be so volatile that it can, you know, to just feel angry, like if you hold all the anger within yourself, you know, it's eating away at you. But then if you let it out, you pour, like, you know, gas on the flame that already exists, it becomes not only destroying yourself, but destroying those around you. And patch the crack in the windshield, keep fighting for you. The extra mile drove on fumes, fighting for you. It's that whole idea of self-sacrifice made when things are falling apart around you. So excellent write and very well done. Do you need to get a drink of water?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Okay. Well, if you feel up to it, I have Loud Sleeper by Lauren67. So go ahead and give that a read for us.
All right. Loud Sleeper by Lauren67. The Adventures of Nigel the Fat Cat and his homie Alfie. Hey, Nigel, look. Ralph, Ralph, the Chihuahua Nightmare is asleep over by L67's bed. Let's go mess with him. Aw, look how peaceful he looks. Give me them firecrackers we saved from the 4th of July. Let's stick him up between his paw toes. And a one, and a two, light. Kaboom! Pop, 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 pop. Huh? Nice? Ralph, 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 Ralph! What the hell? What's going on here? Look at this mess. Who's responsible here? The dog did it. All right, Ralph, Ralph. You're going outside until you learn to behave. Why can't you be like Nigel now, be laying there peacefully on the bed? Ralph! Ralph! And boom.
Oh, that was a great read, Rex. I was so glad I was muted, because when you got to the first part where you were doing the kaboom, pop, pop, and the barking and the growling, I just burst out laughing. And then I was like, oh, shoot. And then I was like, oh, okay, well, good. I'm on mute. So nobody heard me cackle in the middle of Rex's read. Oh, but this is great. I really like the Ralph, Ralph, the Chihuahuan Nightmare is asleep over by L67's bed. Let's go mess with him. That is so like the Chihuahuan Nightmare is such a perfect description of most Chihuahuas' personalities. And then the two cats, the cats that want to mess around with Ralph, Ralph, it takes me back to the Lady and the Tramp cartoon with the two Chinese cats that are messing with the dog. And and then when the L67 Lawrence goes, all right, Ralph, Ralph, you're going outside until you learn to behave. I mean, it's just such a typical cat-dog scenario and the humor in it. I love the physicality of the humor. So excellent write and very well done.
Yes. Happy 4th of July, Rafa. I do like the picture. The two kittens laughing while they're yawning. Yeah, that's a nice Alfie and Nigel moment with those two kittens that are up top. You know, they're going to have a good time. And, hey, why not? The dog always did it. Yes. We kittens, we cats, we are aloof to the goings-on of dogs who sniff their own asses and chase their own tails. So it wasn't us.
Absolutely. That's so true. Well, up next, we have An Owl Sonata, number 20, by Jack Blue. The lunatic nocturnal snow, shrouding all the village tight, mutely roared me away, but I heard a timeless tap like a typewriter conversing with some ghost bound to life, rapping lento appassionato, or chanting jazzily to doom. Someone blue asleep forever seemed to be reciting all of what was buried and afloat on Lucifer's cold, cool libraries. On the lake we saw the swords hovering with heaven's cords and listened to the angels' songs or dainty demons' greedy gongs when the waters warping wide carried us to requiem. When the blizzard turned blue, I heard the typewriter retell the story of a lilac twig buried deep below the snow. To be reborn as dreamer's sword, aglow against the curse of wealth. End poem.
Great read, Ben. All right. Jack went with My Typewriter Was Tombstone Still, Heard a Cry of Mercy in the City of the Damned. Actually, this is actually pretty good. I like this. The idea of, well, you've got Lucifer in here. You've got the Requiem, so to speak. The Blizzard Turned Blue. Plus the Lunatic Nocturnal Star. The idea with that note, of, especially that last one, A Glow Against the Curse of Wealth, kind of hits the idea of that barren typewriter finally coming to life, and it's the voice that comes from those on the lower angle that actually put forth that hits on those that the idea of the dreamer's sword taking flight in the form of the written word itself. Because he hits on that, like a typewriter conversing with ghosts bound to life. I like that line. Rapping lento appassionato or chanting jazz leader doom, someone blew asleep forever, seemed to be reciting all of what was buried and afloat on Lucifer's cool libraries, the evils in the world itself. And that lake, we saw the sword, kind of has me thinking of a lady in a lake, the sword of Excalibur. And then it hits also angel songs. And there's a note there that, too, the idea of, what's his name, Gabriel. Gabriel was the warring angel, the punisher angel, so to speak, or dainty demons, greedy gongs, when waters walking wide, carried us to Requiem, the idea of, heaven bound once life has been taken. But that last one, I heard the typewriter retell the story of a lilac twig. The idea of what comes from that frozen ground can be a rebirth into that which one can walk themselves once more past the idea of those who take all.
I like that. And yeah, especially how you mentioned that the representation of the lilac twig being that moment of rebirth. But really great observations there, Rex. Yeah, I like this one. I think the imagery and metaphors are just absolutely brilliant. I like how it speaks on the idea of the power that is at a writer's fingertips when they commune with their typewriter. Obviously, nowadays, not a lot of people use typewriters, but, you know, and I remember having a typewriter when I was younger, and there is something just really great about that click, click, click noise. It's almost like you're creating music at the same time you're creating words. And I did like the imagery of on the lake, we saw the swords hovering with heaven's chords and listen to the angel's songs or dainty demons' greedy gongs when the waters warping wide carried us to Requiem. I like how the when the waters warping wide is great alliteration with the W sound, but it also is a great representation of the parting of the Red Sea and a journey taken. I like how it speaks on going as on a quest and how there's that idea throughout this rite that as poets, as writers, we choose to represent both the light and the dark. So amazing lines and very well done. All right. Up next, we have here we go. I'm going to grab the one write that we have for tonight that has a SoundCloud, and that'll give us both a little bit of a break since we have time to do that. And this is Subordinates Do the Role I Play by Titus. And like I said, he was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So here we go.
Subordinates do the role I play. Long after midnight, stands alongside many who are called the living dead, I do believe the souls I hear confide in reliving all the outcomes I do dread. I would have to gaze a time alone, it bearing down on death, to be my own. I found the same like the lost souls gathered here, who do play these roles. Long after midnight stands alongside many who are called the living dead. I do believe the souls I hear confide in reliving all the outcomes I do dread.
Great read, Titus. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam.
Yeah, great read. Great choice of background music. It added an extra layer of eeriness to this. I really like this writer. It has a classic feel to it, wonderful rhyme and flow, great imagery, an excellent dark write on having to face the nearness of our own death and accept it, you know, that the passing of time brings us closer and closer to the end of our lives. I really like that this all the way through, but especially in the middle stanza with, I would have to gaze a time alone at bearing down on death to be my own, are found the same like the lost souls gathered here who do play these roles. Wonderful lines and very well done.
All right. I guess I'll go a bit different. Long after midnight stands alongside many who are called the living dead. I do believe the souls are here confined in reliving all the outcomes I do dread. The essence of living a life and the roles that one has played through that life and the outcomes that came along with it from the youthful days and the teenage into the 20s and beyond, we all play a number of roles from growing up, walking into that that rebel angle, the teenage years, and growing into having the need to find essence in who and what we are and what we do, the need to work, the need to provide. So we all have those roles, and each new role kind of washes off the other one. So you're left with a living dead notion of what once you were. And this kind of hits the idea of that which kind of hits upon one in the moment when they all accumulate later on in life, as that middle stanza hits it bearing down on death to be my own. I found the same like the lost souls gathered here who do play these roles. So the idea of the reliving of triumphs, regrets, losses, maybe even angles played that weren't very positive at one time, everything kind of revisits on the back end of life, and you're left wondering about how you walk through those moments and how they occurred and what transpired within them and what drove you forth afterwards.
Absolutely. Very cool observations there, Rex. All right. Up next, we have Duh, I like that title, by Bearden 7. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read for us.
Duh by Bearden 7. Yeah. The gentry repeats itself. Duh, go, kill yourself before it's too late, or don't. Fun's not over yet. Problem with the young, now. Tomorrow? Fuck that. Then, some well-meaning motherfuckers tell you to hurry up and die. What? Sorry, man, we lie about everything. Time heals all wounds? That's just bullshit. Want to have a mainstream fad merchant of doubt life collectivism? Yeah? Fuck off. Enjoying the deep social reset correction. To socialize murder? Yeah, genocide for profit. Nothing new. We just got here 2 generations of tech, maybe 3. And we've been here how long? And now you're in a rush for anyone to bend over and, how about making your decisions on 1,000 generations of wellness? Damn everyone pushing your genetics into a grave. Goddamn psychos, sucos, and the whole mass media drowning. Yeah, working just as fine. I mean it. Go ahead. Stop reading this. Take a breath. Then enjoy the silence as an actual sensation, which we practice will make you want more. That would be not be a bad thing. So, good luck with that. Try not to allow a stupid opinion affect you too much. Know your whys, whens, and who and what, like every second. You would definitely not have your head filled with media shit. But go ahead and YouTube a question about conspiracy theory accuracy, copyright term by the CIA, happening at AI speed. And you think they are the stupid ones. Yeah, that's called a psyop. What the fuck up? Or wake the fuck up. Or you could learn how to garden fruit and flowers and trees and love and friends and yourself and permission to know your own life. This is your chance to be human. Anyway, peace. Peace to you, and a shout out to the common man. Now get me a beer. God damn, I got to do everything myself? That long, dry, and concrete loneliness is sound on. And boom.
Great, great read there, Rex. Damn, this is good. I mean, it's hard hitting, it's edgy, it's got brilliant wordplay in it. I like how he doesn't hold back any of his punches. It's an amazing write on the idea of a society, a government that tries to control the common man by saying, we'll say when you can stop grieving, we'll say, or when you can grieve, we'll say when you can are worthy of living, we'll say when you're worthy of dying. We are in control of every aspect of our life. And I like how it also speaks on the importance of asking questions, with the whys, the whats, and all that, I really like where he says, then some well-meaning motherfuckers tell you to hurry up and die. What? Sorry, man, we lied about everything. And then we just got here, humanity. The idea that we think we know everything, and yet our time on this earth, we have so little experience individually and collectively. And, where he says, how about your decisions on 1,000 generations of wellness? Damn, everyone pushing your genetics into a grave. The idea that we want the idea of genetics controlled and manipulated, because it goes back to, and I could be wrong, but I think it speaks on the idea to me anyways of saying, we will control who is worthy and who is not of life and death. And I think that's just a powerful and sad statement. But there definitely is a lot to dig into this right. Very layered and intelligent and very well done.
All right. I got one thing that I remembered because of what he wrote. There is something that really came to bear. And this is it. There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly, and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits. That was a show back in the 60s, The Outer Limits, and that was the opening monologue.
And
yep. Ran the same gamut as Rod Serling, but it was meant to offer that note, as he puts in here, the psy-op, the note of control, the note of telling you how, what, where, when, and why to eat, sleep, shit, and go to work. The idea of the embellished thought of, oh, there's no such thing as a psyop. It's all a conspiracy theory. Yes, the conspiracy theories keep coming true. So when does a conspiracy theory not become a conspiracy theory? When the theory is real and the conspiracy is led by those who have control. I like that. Thank you, Bear. That was cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Up next, we have Harmony Island by Lockdown Larks. Descending the mountains, I came upon the black land and sat a while with the Lord of Darkness on a perhaps that I might understand the way of being to be more than less. Alas, the stories told were of the free who were sourcing the wars of wrath. Having extracted all life from the sea, it became unclear which was the path. I checked the rivers now bursting with souls, but devoid was knowledge of destiny, just data flowing in armies of trolls, all looking for reasons to disagree. Am I to be engulfed by a darkest hour? Then suddenly there a man who was whole. He said love and giving was the power, and that a ring should be my goal. By the river I rested under a willow tree, amongst rustling leaves whisperings, listened to a story of a green eternity. If you want to know how love sings, the insight was to keep moving on, seeking those who would help me grow, and finding the grace of a swan proposed to the one who will know. As the wars raged on all around, splitting the river and island I could see, there seemed no blood on the ground. Could life there be sweet as honey, covered by the ending of a rainbow, shining bright harmony was singing. What could be there? I didn't know. Surely this is the place of the ring. End poem.
And I see it will be continued. This isn't the end. And he went with, "'Twas in the darkest depths of Mordor, upon the billion-blooded sea." There is a long stuff. That note to Harmony Island, kind of offering up that note to some Edenic place. But he does hit on the Black Lands, Lord of Darkness. Alas, the stories told were of the free who were sourcing the wars of wrath. Having extracted all life from the sea, it became unclear which was the path. Kind of hits on the descendants, the decadence of humanity. A lackluster note to having something spiritual. But he also hits on that. I checked the rivers now bursting with souls, but devoid was knowledge of destiny, just data flowing in armies of trolls, all looking for reasons to disagree. The note of the of those who have no sense of being other than that note to disrupt, offer chaos, and be the minions of Mephistopheles, so to speak, offering up those dark hours, the thought of destruction. And by the river I rested under the willow tree, amongst rustling leaves, whisperings, listen to a story of green eternity. If you want to know how love sings, again, that note coming back to spiritual forgiveness, and then the trek further, and then through the land where the war waged, covered by the ending of rainbow, shining bright, harmony was singing. What could be there? I didn't know. Surely this is the place of the ring. That note to the ring, obviously rolling into the Lord of the Rings, and maybe the idea with that, that ring, that search for the ring of power, that which corrupts itself and getting rid of it. Don't know. Have to find out later on in the next piece.
Absolutely. Well, it's very cool to see that this is going to be continued, that there will be a second part. This has great rhyme and flow, wonderful imagery. I did like how he put in the nod to J.R.R. Tolkien's writing with the Hobbit and the towers and, you know, the carrying the ring, and the how that represents the end goal, the search for peace and for power and love and, you know, all this stuff. And I really liked that this is a representation of an individual's journey to find what this world needs. And I really like the lines, the insight was to keep moving on, seeking those who would help me grow, and finding the grace of a swan proposed to the one who will know. That's wonderful lines on the idea of those people that were meant to meet in our life and to be around because they are somebody who will help us to spiritually and emotionally grow. So, wonderful lines and very well done. All right. And our last poem from that contest is Journey Beyond the Veil by Jody Melton. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
Journey Beyond the Veil by Jody Melton. In the darkest depths of Mordor, where shadows weave the lore, upon the billion-blooded sea, where no man dares to soar, whispers linger, heavy, thick, a tapestry of dread, a tale unfolds, silent, slick, beneath the waves that bled. The water, darkest midnight, churned with stories lost, of heroes bold and villains, turned, and lives that paid the cost. Here the deep holds secrets, in its cold, unyielding grasp, ancient, eternal, it keeps its lore in a silent, ghostly clasp. Beneath the surface, realms unfold, where light dares not to pierce, a world apart, hypothermic, cold, both beautiful and fierce. The creatures here, unseen by eyes, in the dark they roam and reign, silent watchers of the skies, in this domain of pain. In the heart of this abyss, where despair seems to breed, lies a spark, a flicker of bliss, a glimmer of hope in need. Or even in the darkest deep, where nightmares find their birth, lies a promise that we keep, a bond tied to the earth. Adventurers, brave and few, drawn by tales of old, venture forth with a view into the depths bold and cold, seeking treasure, seeking truth, in the silence they proceed, bound by the fire of their youth, driven by their adopted creed. This journey, long and fraught with peril, through the heart of darkness and unraveling morrow, shows us the strength within, the light we can reclaim. In the depths of our mortal, we find ourselves again. So let us dive deep and true into our own dark seas, for in the depths we find the blue, and with it our release. In the darkest depths of mortal, a lesson bold and free, upon the billion-blooded sea, we find our destiny. And poem.
Great read there, Rex, and an amazing write by Jody, who does a lot of great references to the Lord of the Rings. Great rhyme flow, wonderful imagery. I like how this speaks on going on an adventure. And so it has a very epic feel to it, but it's also about that which we discover within ourselves. I like his description here. The water dark as midnight churned with stories lost of heroes bold and villains turned and lives that paid the cost. Aren't those always the best stories, you know, good against evil, you know, the adventures gone on, the stories that are left behind. I also like where he says in the end, so let us dive deep and true into our own dark seas, for in the depths we find the blue and with it our release. You know, the idea that within each of us are these dark seas churning madly, and it's only after we conquer those that we find the beauty and the blueness within, that we seek out our own destiny after going through that darkness. So great lines and very well done.
Thanks. Journey Beyond the Veil, that hits the idea of apocalypse, you know, the real meaning of apocalypse, not the idea of what we turn apocalypse into, the destruction, you know, what apocalypse means, and its true meaning is unveiling. The note of taking the cloth away from one's eyes and reveal the light that sits beyond the darkness that is bled into that covering. And he hits on that right up top with the first stanza. In the darkest depths of Mordor, where shadows weave the lore, upon the billion bloody sea where no man dares to soar, whispers linger heavy, thick, a tapestry of dread, a tale unfolds silent, slick, beneath the waves that bled. So this is not just the unveiling of the darkness itself and all that comes with it, but it's that that depth dip into the center of self, because he hits it. The water darkness midnight churn with stories lost of heroes bold and villains turned and lives that paid the cost. The idea of all those stories that have been woven over the centuries, tales of heroism, tales of defeating the evil, yet they're not taken to heart anymore. We've lost that note of what it means to be the hero and the villain. Nowadays, it's the villain who gets the nod, while the hero is looked upon as the beast itself. Everything's gone topsy-turvy. So and when he rolls into beneath the surface, in the heart of this abyss, adventures brave and few. The idea, it isn't just the journey to reanimate the stories themselves. It's a journey within to remember those stories. And it's also that journey to find the heart and soul of what once we were, as opposed to what now we are.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well said, David. And really great show tonight. I could fit in one more if you want, but it would be from another contest. And
hold those together so they're not separate.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, that I'll just do as planned, because it was from the fly contest, and I figured I'd just keep those all on break on through on Friday. But really awesome show tonight. Great lineup of poetry.
Yes, it was. Finally finishing out with that, and I can comment and close
yeah,
that.
Right.
It took a while.
Finally, we can both close our contest.
Yes.
So.
All right, for those still listening, check in to Sunday. We've got, it's St. Patty's Day, so I've got some Irish songs, some funnies, some old ones, and some newer ones as well that are real good pub players. So have a dip into the music for St. Patty's Day. Have a bit of fun.
Very cool. I am looking forward to that show. As well as many others. Make sure, everyone, to keep an eye out on the contests and topic boards put up by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses. A couple that need rights are for Wednesday's Art of Seduction show, being ran by Gray Eyes Smith, and open to pre-rights is Bring Your Sexy, for The Art of Seduction. And then for Thursday's show, S. Sharp is running a contest, and please make sure to check that out. He's got it's called Luck of the Irish, and he's got a bunch of different quotes that have to do with luck, or you can simply write on the topic of luck. Like, for example, he's got, when it comes to luck, make your own, Bruce Springsteen. Luck is believing you're lucky, Tennessee Williams. And just a great variety of morsels to dig into. And, of course, like Rex says, don't forget to check out his contest for Sunday. And, you know, throughout, we've got plenty of contests lined up. The contest is already closed, but for tonight's Twisted Tuesday show, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, readers and commenters are welcome as we delve into poetry inspired by the art of Justina Copania. So, very cool. And like I said, Rex, awesome show. Always great to hang out with you.
All right, gang. We're off until next Tuesday for doing After Midnight once more. And we'll see you then. Good night, everybody.